So from an NLP perspective, let's look at this theme that we have in all our trainings, the theme of cause and effect. See, most people will come into us and they'll say, help me, I'm at the effect of some cause, either inside of myself or outside of myself, over which I have no control. Can you help me, please? That's how people will come in. They'll say, oh, I would have been successful except for, I would have been really great except for this, this, or this. And then they'll give you all their reasons or excuses for their lack of success. What this means to us is if they believe that to be real, that will be real for them. Now, from our perspective, if we're going to be an artist of change and we're going to help people to produce different results in their life, and what we're talking about is reasons versus results, we know that reasons or excuses are on the effect side of the equation and results are on the cause side of the equation. If we move from the effect side of the equation to the cause side of the equation and say, yes, I create those things that happen in my world, is that going to change the world around us, yes or no? Yes, it can't not. It can't not change the world around us. When we change our beliefs and we move from effect to cause and we say, I create everything that happens in my world, that can't not change the world around us. If we help a client move from the effect side of the equation to the cause side of the equation where they say, yes, I did create this, and what do I want to create instead, is that going to change their world? It can't not. When they looked for light to behave as a wave, it behaved as a wave. When they looked for it to behave as a particle, it behaved as a particle. What that means is the world around you can't not change if you change your thinking about it. The observer always and intimately affects the observed. Quantum physics tells us that. Something doesn't exist until we look for it to exist. So the moment we move from the effect side of the equation to the cause side of the equation, the world can't not change around us. And that becomes really extremely important for us as master practitioners of NLP. Now let me ask you this. If we look at a client and we see them as being total beings of light, capable of changing just like that, is that going to change whether or not the client changes? Without a doubt. And this has been true. We know this. I mean, this has been passed down historically. We saw this in hypnosis. We saw this in various forms of psychotherapy. That the beliefs of the hypnotist will absolutely affect whether or not what the client actualizes in a therapeutic situation. So the beliefs of the hypnotherapist will absolutely affect what the client actualizes in that therapeutic session. So if you look at the client as being able to change just like that, they will. And I have crazy beliefs about people being able to change just like that. And as a result, they leave a training and they go get on the plane that they couldn't previously get on without freaking out, and they're in a good state, having fun and laughing. And it's all a result of belief. So what this tells us as master practitioners of NLP is that we've got to change our beliefs about what our clients are capable of now. We've got to change our beliefs right now about what people are capable of in terms of their ability to change just like that. Because your beliefs will determine what they actualize. Your beliefs will determine what they actualize, what they're capable of actualizing. Because the observer and the observed are always intimately interconnected. You can't look at them without affecting them in some way. That's a huge responsibility. So if you can't look at your client and see them as being able to change just like that, you should refer them out to somebody who can. So we've got to change our beliefs really, really quick, is what this means. Okay, that's the first part. The observer and the observed are always, always intimately interconnected. They're always intimately interconnected. And the other part of this is that whatever you think you are, because there's no difference between you and that which appears outside of you, and there's non-locality of information at the quantum level. We're all intimately interconnected. There's no difference between you and that which appears outside of you. Location has no meaning in a quantum mechanical world. What that means is that inside of you, you have access to all the resources of the entire known universe. So at any given moment, whatever thought that you have, you're placing boundary conditions on the unlimitedness of you. And that also means that whatever you think you are, you're always more than that. Whatever you think you are, you're always more than that. And with all that in mind, just remember that what you believe to be real is real, and what you focus on determines your reality. Let me tell you one more quick story. So some of you are familiar with this story. It's the story of Mr. Wright and Cribiosin. So Mr. Wright was a cancer patient. And Mr. Wright's doctor had the ability to get an experimental cancer drug called Cribiosin. Now, Mr. Wright had previously been an avid airplane flyer. And what's important about that is that he used to like to fly his airplane at heights of 12,000 feet where there's not much oxygen. And he was pretty far progressed in terms of his cancer. The development of his cancer had metastasized into the lungs. And he was no longer walking around like normal unassisted. He couldn't eat regular foods. Clearly, he wasn't able to fly his plane. But they had an experimental cancer drug that came out called Cribiosin. And Mr. Wright's doctor didn't want to give him the experimental drug because he was too far along with the cancer. But Mr. Wright begged him for the drug. And so finally the doctor gave him Cribiosin. And within a matter of days, Mr. Wright was up walking around in the hospital talking about the wonders of Cribiosin, telling everybody how great it was. This was written up in the Journal of the American Medical Association. So Mr. Wright's talking about the wonders of Cribiosin. Pretty soon he was eating normally, walking unassisted, and he took to flying his plane once again at heights of 12,000 feet where there wasn't much oxygen. So the doctor took that as being a sign that Mr. Wright was healed. And then it came out that Cribiosin was ineffective in the treatment of cancer. And within a matter of days, Mr. Wright was sick again, and he was back in bed. Now, the doctor, when he wrote this up, he said that the tumors began to melt like snowballs on a hot stove. And so the doctor said he did something that he wouldn't consider doing normally. He said he gave him Cribiosin 2, which was just distilled water. And he told him that the first Cribiosin had a poor shelf life, and therefore that's why it didn't work. He said this was better, new, improved Cribiosin. And he gave him Cribiosin 2, and he said within a matter of days, once again, Mr. Wright took to walking again after he got the Cribiosin 2, the new improved Cribiosin, which was actually just distilled water. He once again took to flying his plane at heights of 12,000 feet with not much oxygen. And once again, for all intents and purposes, he was healed. But then it came out in the media that Cribiosin was totally ineffective in the treatment of cancer, was never effective, never would be, never had, never would. And within a matter of days, Mr. Wright died. Which speaks to the power of the human mind and the power of belief. Because Mr. Wright believed that he would be healed, and therefore he was. Yeah, well, the example that comes from the Bible, when Jesus of Nazareth went down to heal the blind man, and the blind man said, "Master, do you believe?" Or he said, "Master, can you heal my eyes? Can you make me see?" And Jesus said, "Do you believe that I can?" And the man said, "Yes, I do." And Jesus said, "Well, then it is your belief and your faith that shall heal thee." And he rubbed the mud in his eyes and he said, "Now see. Open your eyes and see. It is your belief and your faith that shall heal thee." Now, by the way, you have as much power within you as Mr. Wright had when he healed himself. Once again, we have a warehouse of resources inside ourselves to succeed. And as Milton Erickson said, most people are going in there with a pen light looking around. We want to flip on the lights and open up the warehouse. Because you have that kind of power. What we believe to be real is real, and what we focus on determines our reality. What you believe to be real is real, and what you focus on determines your reality. So, let's take a look at change. With all that in mind, now let's look at types of change, and keeping all this in mind, bearing all of this in mind. So in change, generally, we have two different types of change. We have remedial change, and we've got generative change. In remedial change, we look at the person as being broken. They need to be fixed, and when you're done, the problem is gone. In generative change, the person's okay, and if you just install curiosity and adaptation and you install process, the person generalizes that change into their life so that they could never have the types of problems that the person who came to you for remedial change came to you for. Which type of change do we do in NLP? It's actually a trick question. We do both. We do both remedial and generative change because anybody can go in and fix the problem. We can always fix the problem. Which kind of change is preferred? I think the generative change would be preferred. The person's okay. They're not broken. They're okay. You install curiosity, and through adaptation and teaching them process, then they could never have those problems that other people have.